Hi, I'm Una Chaplin, and I'm the host of a new podcast called Hollywood Exiles. It tells the story of how my grandfather, Charlie Chaplin, and many others were caught up in a campaign to root out communism in Hollywood. It's a story of glamour and scandal and political intrigue and a battle for the soul of a nation. Hollywood Exiles from CBC Podcasts and the BBC World Service. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
One question that I'm really invested in is, what is the role of the artist in the face of the most horrific conditions? How do artists keep creating in those moments? Today on the podcast, the Palestinian poet Mus'ab Abu Toha recently fled Gaza. I can't think of anyone better to answer these big questions. I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud. Okay, look, it's been just over 6 months since the horrific attack by Hamas that killed approximately 1,200 people, most of them Israeli civilians. Hamas still has more than 130 people held hostage. Since then, Israel has launched a war in Gaza that, according to health officials there, has killed more than 33,000 Palestinians. More than 13,000 of the dead are children. Now look, this is an arts podcast. We've had several conversations on the show about how the war in Gaza is affecting the arts world. You may have heard some of those conversations about how it's creating division, about how it's fueling protest. It's also raising some serious questions about the role of artists in the world right now. I keep asking myself this question over and over, which is how? How do artists, how do the most sensitive and tender among us continue to create in the face of such horror? Today on the podcast, Mus'ab Abu Toha. He's a Palestinian poet, an essayist whose debut collection of poetry is called Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear. He won the American Book Award for that collection. In 2019, he was a visiting poet and a librarian in residence at Harvard University. He returned to Gaza just a few days before October 7th, and then it took him more than 2 months to escape to Egypt with his wife and his three young children. Mus'ab has been sharing his poetry on social media almost daily, which in and of itself feels to me like a radical act, this idea of making art amidst so much destruction. I caught up with Mus'ab a few days ago. Here's our conversation. Mus'ab, thank you so much for being here today, man. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, El Amin, for hosting me.
Of course. Listen, we should begin by saying it's Eid. Let's just begin with that, and then we can continue. It feels a bit odd to sort of talking about a celebration in the middle of so much destruction, but also it's Eid. That's what you do. You say, Kul sana wa tayyib. You say, I hope that you're well, and I hope that next year you're well too, you know?
Inshallah, every year we will be able to talk about poetry, about beauty in this world, away from the destruction that's been happening in Gaza and the West Bank and everywhere in the world.
So as I mentioned, you post a few lines of poetry almost every day. So that's where I'm hoping we might begin. I'm wondering if you could read one of the poems that is getting so much traction right now. Would you read a little bit of What Is Home?
Okay, so What Is Home is not a long poem, so I'm going to read all of it.
Yes.
What is home? It is the shade of trees on my way to school before they were uprooted. It is my grandparents' black and white wedding photo before the walls crumble. It is my uncle's prayer rug where dozens of ants slept on wintry nights before it was looted and put in a museum. It is the oven my mother used to bake bread and roast chicken before a bomb reduced our house to ashes. It is the cafe where I watched football matches and played. My child stops me. Can a four-letter word hold all of these?
That's a lot to sit with. Mus'ab, what has happened to your home?
So we evacuated our house on October 12th, and we lived in a small, very small apartment. There were about 25 people. I mean, my parents and my siblings and their children. We were living in two rooms. And then, I mean, we were risking our lives by going back because we thought that anything can happen on the way to our home. On October 27, when my father returned, was on his way home at 8 in the morning, he didn't find our house. He found it a heap of rubble. So our house used to be three floors. I had a wonderful English language library in my home. And my younger brother, who's an Arabic language scholar, had also a wonderful Arabic literature and language collection of books. But everything is under the rubble. I mean, I cannot imagine myself living without books.
Yeah.
And you can see in the background, I have a small book collection.
Yes, I can
so
see
these
that.
Are books that, yeah, a few of my friends, a few of my generous friends, try to, you know, rebuild some of my library here in Cairo. And I get a lot of requests from people, you know, we want to send you books. I tell them, no, don't send many books because I'm not going to live here forever. I might be traveling to America or go back to Gaza. I don't want to carry a lot of things with me.
Yeah, there's something about a book. In many ways, where you base your books is where you base your home.
Exactly. I mean, every book on my shelf back in Gaza is different than any book that I would get now or tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these books have their own stories. They lived with me during the horror of October 7th and even before. I mean, we have been living in horror since around the time I was born and even before. But for me, the first time I witnessed an airstrike was when I was 8 years old. It was 2000.
Hmm.
And I was wounded when I was 16 in 2009. And I lived a 51-day war in 2014. And I lived with my three children. It was the first time for me to be a father living under war. In 2021, I couldn't protect my children. And later, we couldn't protect the books that we thought that we were bringing them to a safe home.
Mm.
I mean, I've never imagined that my house would be bombed by Israel because it's a house full of life. It's full of books. It's full of everything that says I'm part of this world.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, the Audre Lorde collected poems book was one of them. I brought it with me from Syracuse. I was studying some of its poems with my professor there. And there are some poems by, I mean, the selected poems by, of Wanda Coleman. There are other poems, you know, that date back to the 19th century.
Yeah.
I mean, I was putting these books on a special shelf. I was putting them up there away from anyone else, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But everything is gone because this bomb, when it falls, it doesn't distinguish between me as the reader or the book. The thing that I'm reading, or the shelf that's carrying the books, or the ceiling that protects and you know, everything.
Yeah.
It doesn't, unfortunately, it doesn't distinguish between anyone.
Mustafa, I want to carry that quote that you just said, you know, the idea that the home contains everything that says I'm a part of this world. I think that's a really beautiful way to put it. There has been so much of focus, and I think rightfully so, on the destruction of lives in Gaza since October, you know, more than 33,000 people and counting. We're 33,000 people dead and counting. But talk to me about the destruction of culture. We're talking about the art. We're talking about the libraries, the architecture, the tangible aspects of civilization. Can you just put that into perspective?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the destruction that's happening in Gaza to universities and schools and libraries and theaters and cinemas and universities. I mean, it's also about destroying the streets, destroying the markets, the libraries. Every corner that reminds a Palestinian of their previous life is being destroyed by the Israeli army.
You're talking about physical spaces, but you're also talking about something that's a little bit intangible, like places where people gather, places where culture sort of happens in a sense.
Exactly. So, a school or a library or a theater is not only about the walls and the chairs and, you know, and the windows or the gate of that leads to that place, but it's also about the memories, you know, that were taking place there between people. I mean, when I walk in the street, sometimes I wouldn't recognize whether this is a hospital or a theater or a school or my neighbor's house or if it's a kindergarten where my child used to go. So it's about erasure of a human life, of a human experience, of a human memory.
I guess I'm curious about the tangible artifacts and the intangible artifacts. You know, things like music and poetry, in a sense, because they can't be physically destroyed, are they stronger now? Is that a place where we can look to art to sort of do something that the tangible places can't?
I think memory and poetry and music, these things are untouchable by the occupation. But on the contrary, the more they destroy our lives, the more they destroy houses and schools and hospitals, the more we see people shred into pieces, the more poems we have. But unfortunately, these poems and the music that we are going to listen to and the songs, the more heartbreaking these poems and these pieces of art would be. I mean, we would continue to have poems, and I think we are hearing a new poets in Gaza now, because everything that's in Gaza pushes people there to become talented, to discover their talent, because I can't explain what I can see. I can't explain it in simple words. I need to use something that's not casual, that's not normal. I need to use poetry and music in order to express what I feel. So I think the best way for us to reflect on this experience, you know, because it's a very immense experience, it's a very horrific experience. So we tend to use something that's not normal, which is poetry, which is music, you know?
Musab, that's a really, I think, extraordinary way to put it, and I have not thought of it that way before. I want to pause here. We're going to be back in just a second.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Okay, we are back, and if you're just joining us, my name is Al-Amin Abdul Mahmoud, and this show is called Commotion, and I'm speaking with the poet Musab Abu Toha. He's a Palestinian poet who had just escaped from Gaza to Egypt a few months ago. Musab, you're still able to keep writing poetry throughout all of this. I think that is extraordinary, given the relentlessness of the news coming out of Gaza, news about people that you love who are suffering. How are you able to continue to do the work under these conditions?
Well, I'm doing this because I need to do it. It's something that I see and I know about that I need to share with the outside world. If I was in Gaza, I would take a lot of videos and photos of some massacres that happened around me. I mean, just 4 hours after we arrived at the other apartment where we stayed for a few days, just 70 meters away from that place, a massacre happened. They bombed a house where about 30 people were killed. Just 70 meters away from our house in Jabalia camp where we had to shelter. So I was able to take a video. I took a video of a mother and her child dangling from the roof of their house. They were about to die. And I took some pictures of some people who were wounded around me. So I was doing this while I was in Gaza. And I was writing a few essays about what I could see. But now that I'm in Egypt, there is nothing that I can do to take photos or videos in Gaza. But I write about what I feel, what I see, what I hear. So for me, writing, especially poetry, is a way for me to reflect on the experience and the emotion that comes with it.
Yeah.
So this is what happens when I write poetry. It's about documenting the experience and my feeling.
Yeah, so much of poetry, it seems, is about witnessing and having been, you know, recorded on the record as having witnessed something. It's about saying, I lived this life and this is the thing that I saw and this is the thing that I felt. A few days ago, you wrote, I don't care how many people read my poetry. I only care about the many stories, screams, and tears my eyes and ears managed to keep alive and put into words so others never forget. Is there any comfort at all to be found, you know, in the knowledge that your words are having that effect, that your poetry, your words are in fact lasting? Do you draw comfort from that?
Well, I draw comfort at least when I know that I'm writing about these things. I don't want people to, at least if I'm just keeping this record for my own, I'd feel some comfort that nothing is being forgotten.
Yeah.
What I hear, what I feel, what I see. You know, my father's voice, my mother's voice, when they tell me that they are looking for some plants here and there to make some food. But at the same time, this poetry is not only about me and my family, but it's also about everyone who did not find anyone to write about, or who died before without being noticed. Because people in Gaza and the West Bank and everywhere turn into numbers. You know, when you see the news, they would say 15 people were killed in a school. But no one tells us who these 15 people are. And, you know, and what is happening in Sudan also. I mean, every single person is not a number.
Yeah.
He is a story. And I know that we hear this a lot. I mean, people are stories, etc. But also people are not only stories, that these people are dreams and hopes and feelings. I need to feel how these people were feeling when they were killed or before they were killed. I need to imagine their lives before it was taken away from them. I need to imagine the bedroom where the children were sleeping before they were buried, mm-hmm. with the room under the ceiling. So this is what I need to do. I need to write about everything that existed before disappearing under the rubble.
Hey, Matt, listen, Mossad, we started this whole conversation by talking about the fact that it's Eid this week, that, you know, a part of what you say during Eid is like, you know, kullu sana wa tayyib, you know, kullu am wa tabkhir, which is the idea that like, hey, I hope every year brings you wellness. I hope every year brings you health and hope. Hope is tough, you know, because also this is a time where like during Eid you would gather with family. You have a big family. You have, you know, six siblings, your parents. The gathering is not going to be the same. You know, your family, you know, your family is still in Gaza. Do you allow yourself in these moments to hope, or is that too difficult right now?
I think hope is something that we need to create. If it's not real, we have to create it in order for us to continue living. And I promise you that people in Gaza will be celebrating Eid, even though we say, oh, there is no Eid this year. But no, you will find people going out in the street. I mean, Eid is not about, you know, clothes, but you will see people shaking hands and hugging their neighbors and their friends and exchanging visits. This is something that you will see in Eid, inshallah. Just like two days ago was my younger brother's birthday. So I got a phone call from my father using my brother's phone. He said, "Hi, Mus'ab, how are you? Oh, daddy, how are you? It's been a long time since I last heard your voice." And he said, "We are at your brother's house. We are celebrating his birthday." I mean, wow. Celebrating something is not about, you know, the cake or the candles or the clothes. It's about just, you know, telling the other person that I'm aware that it's your birthday. I just want to see you. And Eid is the same thing. People will go out, but it will be a tough Eid because there are lots and lots of houses that are not there anymore. Mm. So again, hope is something that we need to raise, we need to nurture, we need to take care of. It's a very sensitive creature. Sometimes it vanishes, sometimes it's coming back to us sitting on the window. Sometimes it's there in the sky, giving us some light. Sometimes it's a cloud, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, giving shade on a sunny day. So it's something that we don't control, just like other people do not control hope. But it's something that we need to find every day.
That quote that you just said, this idea of hope being something that you need to raise, that's a reference, right? That's a reference to a Palestinian poet who sort of phrased the idea of hope as like, it's much like child rearing. You have to raise and nurture hope. I do want to talk a little bit about that, but that practice of raising hope, if you will, how do you begin to do that?
So I see hope in my father, because my father, even after our house was bombed, he started to collect some mattresses from under the rubble, some blankets, and he started to find some tin sheets, and he started to build a room next to our destroyed building. And he started even to make his own garden from the plants that and flowers that survived in our own garden. Wow. And I have some pictures of that. So this gives me hope that a Palestinian will never give up, because there is something, even though it's destroyed, but there is part of it that could be the beginning of a new thing. But people, because we have been undergoing this massive destruction of our culture and our infrastructure, we have been only focusing on the reality around us, you know, building a home, traveling, you know, having an airport, a seaport, you know, having a small family with you to protect this family. You know, I mean, these basic dreams that other people see as, you know, very, very basic thing. But for us, because we lack these things, I mean, we continue to dream about having those things, even though these are things that we should not be thinking a lot about, that we should be born with. But unfortunately, these are the most immediate things for us. It's not one state or two states now, these days, but it's about being protected from the occupation and having our own cities and our own sky you know, rather than seeing a warplane or a drone buzzing in the sky. To see, I mean, I'm 31 years old. I can tell you that I've never seen a passenger plane in the sky of Gaza since I was born.
Wow.
Yeah. The only kind of planes I saw was a helicopter, an Apache, a drone, an F-16, an F-35. Never seen a passenger plane. And there is one poem of, that's published. It's called I Still Have Dreams, or My Dreams as a Child. I still have dreams of seeing the refugee camp from the window of a plane. I've never seen my city. I mean, I was born in a refugee camp, but I've never seen Gaza from a plane window.
Hmm.
Why is this dream unachievable?
I think that's a really big question that is really good to leave us with. I'm also really still sticking with this image that you gave us of your dad regrowing the garden that he has. Maybe before we go, do you have any few lines of poetry that you'd like to share before we end the conversation today?
Yeah, sure. No problem. It's my pleasure. Okay. Yalla. We love what we have. We love what we have no matter how little. Because if we don't, everything will be gone. If we don't, we will no longer exist, since there will be nothing here for us. What's here is something that we are still building. It's something we cannot yet see, because we are part of it. Someday soon, this building will stand on its own, while we will be the trees that protect it from the fierce wind, the trees that will give shade to children sleeping inside or playing on swings.
Something that we are still building. Thank you so much, Masab. I appreciate your time. Thank you so much for your thoughts and your poetry and your reflection. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Alamin, and shukran, ya Aziz. Allah. Yalla, tahayyat. Bye-bye.
Bye. Mozamo Batoha is a poet and essayist whose debut collection of poetry is called Things You May Find Hidden in My Ear. It won an American Book Award. We reached him in Cairo. Look, there is so much more to Mozab's story that we just didn't have time to get to today. He wrote about his harrowing detention and escape from Gaza in a piece for The New Yorker. If you're interested in learning more, we're going to put that link on Instagram. Also, you can find it in our show notes. My name is Alamin Abdul Mahmoud. This is Commotion. I'm going to be back tomorrow. I'll see you then.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.